alone, they may cause you trouble. They have no shame. They won't hold back, even if you're a good-natured flighting." Ross watched the caravan leave and then started toward Apa. The NPCs may be as scared of the undead, but for him, the living dead were precisely what he needed. He studied the map published at the forum and confirmed this was the area used by players between the levels of 12 and 25 to level up. A low-level noob girl, poorly dressed, 16 years old or even younger, judging by the icon next to her name. The choice of class was logical for someone like her, a good-natured healer incapable of killing anyone, grinding away like she was supposed to. No one could be more harmless and less suspicious. Ross liked the village. It was much bigger than the one where he'd learned jewelry and gem cutting. There was a lot more going on here, and it had nothing to do with groups of high-level players moving from one place to another. It was easy to identify this place as a true noob capital. There were groups of noobs, as well as individual noobs, running this way and that, cursing each other aloud and in the zone chat, looking for someone or something, and making a fuss about it, peddling useless and overpriced items, and asking silly questions about everything. As soon as Ross reached the outskirts of the village, a private message from someone named Romeo Harlem lit up. He didn't say a single word, but drew two bright red hearts and a tiny rose instead. A true chat wizard. The game had no emoticon sets. You had to roll your own. A few minutes later, someone called Titratch Amigo asked him, without bothering to draw any flowers, "Let's get to know each other? Add me to your friends list." Another message reached him around the same time with a much more straightforward and lewd suggestion. Ross realized he hadn't taken everything into account when deciding on his new image. It was unlikely that all female players were just as popular. The icon, testifying to the similarity between the character's appearance and that of its owner, must be playing a part. There were lots of girls in Second World, all of them young and amazingly beautiful, but who could guarantee that when you flirted with a cute, light elf, the owner of the character wasn't an ugly old crone with a triple chin? The only guarantee was the icon next to one's username. It was believed that this symbol could not be counterfeited. Likewise, one's sex. Before Ross, that is. It didn't matter much that his character would never make it as a model. The link to reality mattered to many players. Within minutes, he felt like disabling chat altogether. For some reason, most of the players tried to text him instead of sending a voice message. Perhaps the reality of the image attracted timid players, or there may have been some other psychological factor at play. Ross ignored the messages from everyone trying to get to know him better, intimately in some cases, and studied the local chat. There was enough to read there. "A party to the fallen city needs a tank. Level 5 elixirs for sale, mana and HP. Hello everyone, why doesn't my wolf cub level up? LFG the fallen city, halfling gob, dagger spect, level 19. New clan recruiting. We grow fast. Zombie teeth needed. Wholesale. Anyone from Texas around? Experienced level 23 tank forming a party to raid the fallen city. DPS players needed, as well as a healer. PM with your level and spec." Ross answered the last announcement, deeming it most reasonable and well articulated. "Hi, I'm a level 14 flighting buffer. All healing spells learned." He received a response nearly instantly. "Barry Barr offers you to join their party. Accept? Decline?" Ross accepted. The party leader's mark flashed up on the map as a tiny orange dot. Over the time it took Ross to reach Barry, another player joined the party, Sexy Babe 79, followed almost instantly by another party member by the name of Merrick. Barry turned out to be a dwarf. Ross wasn't surprised. His forum research had yielded a lot of information. The underground denizens weren't merely good miners, but also excelled as warriors, even though their race had a rather narrow specialization. Nearly all of them were tanks. Sexy Babe 79 was a typical golden-haired elven maiden with a bow. Ross expected something of that sort from the moment he saw her name. Merrick was the only one to surprise him. His skin green as an orc's, the character was short, almost a midget, with spindly arms reaching all the way down to his knees. His race was called a goblin halfling. He must have mixed two or more races together, which was allowed for extended account holders. Ross wasn't much of an aesthete, but paying for a freak like that seemed an odd thing to do. Still, he was in no position to judge others, having performed a very radical transformation of his own character just yesterday. "Right on! Listen up," Barry started. "I know a cool cave. Once we get in, keep right behind me. No one runs out in front. Once I grab aggro and start attacking, the lot of you join in. Archer girl, make sure you don't shoot me in the back. The likes of you are good at it. Shoot their archers and mages if you see any. They'll shift their attention to you, so don't just stand there. Run back the second they turn on you. They'll chase you and run into me. Well, you get it. Nursey, you know any buffs?"
"Sure do," Ross replied.
"Damn, you've got a real-life character? How old are you? Does it matter? I have buffing and healing skills." "Ugh, I don't like babysitting kids. They only cause problems."
"Well, I happen to be capable."
"I'm sure. All right, look, if you draw the mob's aggro or start dealing damage instead of healing, I'll kick you out of the party at once. Got it?"
"Why does the leader get all the loot?" asked Merrick.
"We'll share everything fairly once we're done."
"Why don't you go on your own? You won't have to share with anyone then. Greenskin, what's your deal? Do I look like a rip-off artist to you?"
"I don't know you, and you don't know me. Either set up fair loot distribution or look for other players."
"In that case, I'll leave too," said Babe.
"Oh, to hell with you. Okay, I'll disband the party, specify random loot drops, and send you invites once again."
Nobody minded that. Ross found it funny. He had enough stuff in his bag and on his character to buy half the village, and there he was arguing about sharing trophies from noob mobs. But he didn't let it show. The fallen city looked just like the coachman had described it, a hill pocked with black marks of tunnels burrowing deep inside. There were players near some of the entrances, small groups as well as lone figures. The chat was overflowing with requests from players seeking to join a group. Barry recruited a poorly dressed level 15 warrior with a notched sword called Sathitankar Abelangus. It was easy to see that Sath had one of the cheaper accounts. Ross nearly shed a tear when nostalgia for his recent past hit him. The dwarf led the party confidently, ignoring all the entrances they passed. A bloodied archer jumped out of one such hole as they approached and started to roll downhill with a wild yell. Barry explained, "He must have leveled up his running skill or downed a speed potion. The party wiped while this guy managed to reach the entrance. The undead hate sunlight, so they didn't chase him any further."
"I'd hate to come here at night," declared Babe.
"At night? You'd have to be a complete moron to come here after dusk. The kind of critters that creep up from the lower levels at night would make even a level 50 player sweat. There are bosses down there, too, but they stay deep underground and never come up."
"Bosses?" Ross perked up, and remembering that he should come across like a girl with no experience in life or gaming, added, "Aren't they supposed to drop lots of valuables?"
"Sure," Barry conceded. But we're the ones who will drop instead of the valuables. The local bosses are stingy and don't drop much, whereas the mobs respawn quickly. The carcasses of the ones you kill decompose instantly, and the ground sucks in their remnants. Then they are revived somewhere down there, and it happens real fast. You'll barely manage to mop them up by the time the respawned ones arrive from below. You could use a bunch of top players to clear up everything up to the bosses, with a party of level-appropriate characters following behind. But you'd have to bring the party back up, too. It would take around 10 or 20 hours, all in all, and you'd need around 8 tough players, and all you'd get in return is 1 or 2 good or excellent items, and that's not guaranteed, mind you. That's 30 or 40 bucks per person, 100 if you're very lucky. What about the elixirs they would use for combat, or the wear and tear on expensive weapons and armor from the iron skeletons requiring costly repairs? It's not worth it, really. Top players have much easier and more reliable ways of making money. And here's our hole. What's so special about this one? Asked Ross. Well, for one thing, cotton-armored school kids like you are harder to kill here. There's a long tunnel with no side corridors, and no one will strike us in the back. We dispatch the ones in front while you stand behind us and heal. Got it. Ready? Give us a buff, then. Ross cast all 3 of his buffing spells on each party member. 1 increased physical defense, the other physical attack, and the 3rd sped up mana regeneration. The skills weren't very developed, and the bonuses they provided were minuscule. However, no one demonstrated any surprise or dissatisfaction, so his abilities must be typical for his level. As he'd learned from his own experience and from studying guides, if stats could be distributed any way one liked, developing them one after another, all of them wholesale or none of the above, sufficing with only the points gained by leveling, skills were much more difficult and complicated. If you wanted them to grow, you needed to use them in combat as much as possible, with no regard for mana. That was the only way to progress in any given skill, and the progress was painfully slow. For all the fighting Ross had done, his Chaos Arrow had only grown to Tier 3. Then again, admittedly, he hadn't used it all that often. He had managed to level Lesser Healing of the Summoned Creature all the way up to 8 due to constantly needing to replenish the Leprous's HP, but even this skill lagged far behind the progress of his stats. Noob spells were weak, which meant it was next to impossible to level up a mage on one's own. The character's defenses were too weak, and the damage dealt at the lower levels was too insignificant. The mana expenditure was high as well. A warrior could destroy over 12 mobs over the time it took a mage to kill just 2, and without requiring any rest or potions to replenish mana. It was a little harder for an archer, as arrows cost money and would often break or get lost. However, they still spent fewer resources and leveled even faster than melee fighters due to the damage dealt. Mages were a tough class to play, suffering from a number of extremely unpleasant setbacks. First of all, they really needed to watch the weight they carried. The heavier the load, the slower their spells were cast, and a mage who was too slow casting a spell would be the second funniest sight in Second World, right after a dwarf buffer armed with a bow. Their entire strategy hinged on keeping mobs at a distance, so slowing down meant they'd have to do a tank's work, something mages were very poorly qualified for. Even if you dressed one up in a suit of armor, any incoming melee damage was likely to interrupt the spell, which would have to be cast again. It was easy enough to surmise that low casting speed would result in frequent interruptions. In such a situation, mages could only wave their staves about awkwardly while the enemy kept pounding away at them.
Players who chose to use magic had to wear the lightest armor available, or forego it altogether in favor of cloth garments derisively referred to as rags. The only thing that Ross found reassuring was that the mechanics of the game did not let his bag, no matter how heavy, affect the speed of spellcasting. But it didn't provide any protection either, only making it easier to gather and transport loot. Another factor was that mages needed to prioritize two of their stats, intellect and mental power. Intellect affected a large number of important characteristics. A high intellect made it more likely to break the opponent's magic defense, and was also responsible for the size of one's mana pool and its regeneration rate. Mental power affected magic damage, the amount of restored hit points, the duration of high-level debuffs, and costly buffs. Neither intellect nor mental power provided any protection to the character, despite impacting some other things in combination with other stats. For example, a character with a high intellect was harder to hit with skills from the Reason School, while mental power increased the efficiency of equipment with bonuses to magic defense. Yet neither stat affected physical damage sustained. Warriors, archers, and the like were a whole other kettle of fish. All of them leveled their agility and strength, apart from everything else. The former was linked to one's chance to evade enemy skills, projectile weapons, and melee attacks, while the latter made it possible to wear heavy armor, which reduced physical damage considerably. Furthermore, simply playing their typical role in combat grew their stamina, accuracy, vigor, attack, and defense. This happened to the mages a lot less often. Mobs never reached them, and they never attacked them with melee weapons. Thus, everybody raised their defensive stats but mages. They were bound to remain squishy punching bags. The alternative would be to dump their undistributed points into something like stamina instead of boosting their damage output. But a tank mage of this sort was a pain to play with. Such a character could not withstand much damage, being vastly inferior to warriors in this respect, while also being weak attackers and thus of dubious utility to a party, often running out of mana to boot. All this forced mages into being a class with a narrow specialization, dealing in warfare exclusively or helping to farm a special kind of bosses with high physical and low magic defenses. Even then, they needed to reach at least level 100 to 150 to do any of this, whereupon they were capable of learning skills from scrolls that couldn't be purchased at any mage's guild, but could only be found or dropped by mobs. Those skills were truly something, dealing a whole lot of damage, even at the cost of a lot more mana. Once again, they were useless for solo leveling. Kill even a handful of mobs, then wait for all your best skills to come off cooldown. However, in a siege of an enemy fortress, or a skirmish between the troops of warring clans, two or three mages could give their party a decisive advantage with their area of effect spells, especially when cast simultaneously. The problem with such skills was that one could buy a decent car for the amount of money they fetched, perhaps a very decent one. Some even cost in the range of customized luxury models, or more. As a result, mages were rather unpopular, to say the least, due to their leveling difficulties and the amounts of time, money, and effort it took to turn your character into a capable fighter. There were no limits on the skills one could learn. You could collect them all, provided they didn't conflict with each other, which would be a problem in and of itself. However, high-level skills required specific weapons, of the magical variety, or even highly specialized magic staves. If a player had warrior's abilities, one needed to wield a sword, an axe, or another weapon to be able to use a particular skill. That was costly and awkward, so weapons were the most expensive part of one's equipment. Apart from that, even high-level skills required leveling up, which took a lot of time. Thus, the arsenal of a high-level player would normally contain 3 or 4 skills actively used in battle, typically of the basic noob variety raised to respectable levels. The richer players had another skill or two learned from rare scrolls, but even tycoons didn't need more than 10, as it would take years to develop them. It would also be confusing to have too many skills. One would have to keep all their effects and usage parameters in mind and be able to recall them in a pinch, which was even harder. It wasn't until Ross had pored over the forum on these topics that he realized what a rare and awesome prize his Chaos Arrow was, being a dynamic, scalable skill. All he needed to do was keep leveling it, and it would transform as it grew, not only increasing its damage, but also gaining additional effects. Eventually, it would be as good, or almost as good, as the skills learned from scrolls. Or perhaps it would evolve into something even better. After all, he'd received it instead of a hero's title, so it should compensate for the injustice. Anyway, he would not level it today. Ross's current role was merely that of a party's first aid kit. He would spend a day here, play his new role with gusto, and with luck be spotted by some search party. They were bound to send someone here to check things out, after all. Then he would continue onwards, telling everyone he'd meet that leveling at the fallen city was no longer prudent. Ross didn't come here randomly. He intended to leave tomorrow with the level of 25 or higher. There was nothing to do at the fallen city for players that advanced. They would have to seek new pastures and tougher mobs. Chapter 38. Another unpleasant-looking figure jumped out of the darkness, the mummy of a small creature with a curved club in its bony hand. Barry thrust his shield forward to intercept the hit and pushed the mob back with force. It fell and never managed to rise again, its ribcage smashed by a hammer blow. But 3 more creatures emerged from the darkness, and the dwarf only managed to get 2 of them. The last mummy ignored the tank and attacked Babe for some reason, though she hadn't done it any harm. Merrick materialized behind the mob, only slightly taller, striking the target in the neck with 1 dagger and paralyzing it, then lodged the 2nd in the mummy's temple. Ross cast his healing spell on the dwarf, whose HP bar shrunk a little, and the battle was over in 30 seconds. Another small pack of undead goblins was destroyed. "You don't mind us harassing your undead relatives, do you?" asked Barry with a chuckle. Merrick did not respond, no stranger to jokes of this sort. He just searched the corpses for loot without saying a word. Ross liked the way he carried himself. The halfling might look weird, but he did his job very efficiently and must have been dependable. Unlike the chatterbox dwarf, he hadn't let the party down once. "Nursey, I told you not to cast any healing unless I lose a lot of HP. Why do you do it almost right away? What if the mob switches its attention to you?" "Well, it hasn't, has it? I'm a tank, so I can take plenty of damage, whereas you're a squishy little rag doll likely to bite the dust in only a few blows. Want to find yourself back at the village, eh? Don't join the fray until I get all the mobs to attack me by giving each one a good whack on the head. Also, the lot of you, get ready. We may run into some archers now, and mages. You never know. It's different every time. If it's mages, I'll start losing HP fast, so Nursey will have to be quick." "Got it. Merrick, attack the mages from behind. They hit hard, but they're just as squishy as our Nursey. Hey, there's another bunch of gobs up in front. I can see them. Dwarves have twilight vision. I'll bring all of them over, so get ready for a train."
The dwarf was as good as his word. He came running back, followed by 7 smaller mummies at once. He nearly instantly used some skill affecting all nearby foes and yelled, "Heal me!" Ross cast a healing spell obediently. 2 goblins at once left the dwarf alone and rushed toward the healer to dispense punishment. Barry's skill must have missed them, or his healing the tank had enraged them more than the damage received. "Run, Nursey!" yelled the dwarf, so loud it rung in everyone's ears. Ross decided against running. Instead, he dealt the first goblin a blow on the forehead with his staff, making the mob fall on its rear end, then dodged the other one, tripping the undead creature up and making it roll down the well-trodden earthen floor. Ross cast a healing spell on the dwarf without paying the mobs any further attention. The tank's HP bar had shrunk by some 10%. Safi Tanker helped him with his unsightly sword. Babe held the arrow nocked, batting her unrealistically long eyelashes, but Merrick did what he had to do, dashing to help the healer while ignoring the main group. Within seconds, he killed one of the gobs and tied up the second. Another one stopped hammering away at the dwarf and went after Ross, just as Babe finally made her choice and skewered it with an arrow. The dwarf kept yelling, "Heal!" even though he was no longer under attack and his HP were almost fully restored. A much larger group of mummified gobs emerged from the darkness. They bypassed the dwarf, waving their clubs, having reached a unanimous decision that the healer was more important. By and large, they were right. Merrick glanced toward the exit, which was a long way away, and then at the attacking mobs. He winced and said, almost spitting every word, "Run, Nursey. I'll hold them back." Ross ran for about 10 paces and turned around just as Merrick, having spun around himself twice like an enormous green top, managed to get each mob that was passing by with his daggers. The gobs stopped and assaulted their relative, having lost all interest in Ross. He cast a healing spell, followed by another and another. Merrick's defenses were weak, and the greenskin's HP kept flickering between nearly empty and completely full. That was Ross's doing. The skill was noobish, and he'd never managed to level it, but his unnaturally high mental power made the healing rather effective. "Heal!" the dwarf kept on shouting at the top of his lungs. Judging by his icon in the party window, he had absolutely no reason to yell. He'd barely lost a quarter of his HP, so he could wait a bit longer. "Shut up, will you?" Ross shouted. "Your yelling will attract more of them. Get the ones attacking Merrick. He's doing the tanking for you." "Yikes!" yelped Babe as a fat chunk was taken out of the dwarf's HP bar. "I'm so sorry, Barry. I didn't mean to." The dwarf's prediction about being hit by friendly fire did come true after all. Safi Tanker's HP bar flashed red, and there was nearly nothing left of it in less than a second, leaving him with a measly 5 or 10 HP. Ross switched to him almost in the nick of time, but he never managed to finish casting the spell. The lowly warrior's icon in the party window grayed out. Still putting up furious resistance, Merrick nearly went down too. Ross barely managed to wrest him from death's doorstep. The dwarf finally realized that if he kept chipping away at each of his opponents a bit at a time, he'd go down before any of them would. His damage output was nothing to write home about, so he'd have to assist the dagger fighter if he wanted to get healed. The pressure eased instantly. Together, they took out one mob after another, and soon Ross could keep Merrick's HP up without an effort, and even start throwing Barry some heals. The greenskin was fighting with one arm by then. The second one hung lifelessly, though that didn't affect the speed of his movements. The last mob to die was the one who begrudged getting hit with an arrow, switching to Babe at the end of the battle. Ross didn't even have to heal her, as Merrick finished it off from behind. "Why didn't you heal me?" the dwarf roared. "Put a sock in it," said Merrick in a tired voice. "She was great at healing. She's a good healer, a natural. She's the reason we didn't wipe."
Not all of you lived. Ross shook his head. Well, that one was a total noob, poorly outfitted, and with a stupid stat balance to boot. They offed him in 2 or 3 hits. No way you could have kept him up. There was no point letting him join. Can you heal injuries? No such skill, alas. In that case, I'll run along. Thanks for the party, everyone. There are few of us, and it will get dark soon, said the archer. It will get real dangerous here. That's true, the dwarf nodded. We sure did get carried away a bit. Your party has been disbanded. As they approached the village, Babe saw some acquaintances of hers who were returning from some expedition and turned toward them. The dwarf kept on chattering, primarily addressing Ross, offering to meet the following day and spend another day leveling together. Ross kept responding along the lines of, "Let's see what happens tomorrow." Once they returned to the village and the dwarf left, Merrick said in a low voice, "Don't group with him anymore." "Why?" "He let the final attack of the mobs through to you deliberately." "He wanted to kill me? What for?" "There's an interesting bracelet you have there. I won't ask any questions, but it looks like its grade is good or higher. You might have something else on you, too. You're pretty quick with those heals, and your mana hardly gets used up. You shouldn't be able to pull it off with your stats, and your level isn't all that high either. So there must be something about your gear." "The bracelet is a good one indeed. I got it as a present, but the chance of losing it is very small. I have a white name, after all. The dwarf would not have gotten anything." "The chance is infinitesimal, but it still exists. If you go with him to another dungeon, he'll try to talk you into binding near the entrance, so that you could level faster, albeit with more risk. Once you do that, he'll just keep killing you over and over until he gets all your stuff. Players often do that." "Well, I'd never agree to changing my bind point in the first place. I just wanted to warn you. Keep away from players of this sort." "Thanks." "You're welcome. You're a great buffer. Call me any time, if anything." Ross stared after the goblin halfling. It was strange to find out that there was all manner of intrigue among the noobs. No living creatures wandered through the fallen city at night. No one left their characters there as they relinquished control of them going offline. Everyone stayed at the village. This was the time the creatures from the lowest levels ran rampant, emerging from the depths where the ruins of once magnificent buildings still lay, covered with a mound of earth. Today, however, things were different. One of the players headed deeper and deeper in, disregarding his own safety. Yet, he was not exactly on his own. Undead Philbit Commander, creature summoned from the Realm of Darkness, level 52, skills none, stats, defense 109, attack 98. The mob was a far cry from the Leprous lost fighting the boss, but for a dungeon where mob levels scarcely went above 25, it was the equivalent of heavy artillery. During the daytime, Ross would have cleared the upper levels, but this was the night, with much more formidable creatures crawling out from the depths underneath the hill. He kept running into fiends in the 30 to 40 level range, and even encountered a few elite mobs over level 50. Those were incredibly tough, and he had to heal his pet nearly constantly. In other cases, he kept casting Chaos Arrow, leveling the magical attack skill he was growing to really like. He also made a pleasant discovery. The pet could be buffed, too, and while the buffs were active in battle, the corresponding skills leveled up. He would definitely have to get them up to snuff, collecting as many scrolls as he could at the guild and using the buffs on himself as well as his pet. By the end of his night run, Ross raised his level from 15, which he'd achieved in the daytime, to 27. There was nothing surprising about it. He no longer had to share the XP with the rest of the party, and the new mobs were much tougher, which also expedited progress. He didn't go any higher than that, His new level was sufficient for him to equip a few of his better trophies. In particular, he could now use the least demanding Filbit Mage Staff, which would make his Chaos Arrow deal more damage, and his healing more potent. Dawn was still a long time away when Ross emerged from the tunnels and headed away from the village, distinguishable only by the lonely light of the Night Guard's lantern. The map marked the outlying area as relatively safe, with few mobs and even fewer aggressive ones, and hardly any players. He would keep on until he'd reach a town where he was unknown to anyone, make himself conspicuous, run a few useful errands, and then move on. He would try to get noticed in every new town. People should remember the flighting, and none of the interested parties should find it odd to see him wherever he might be. Ross intended to create a certain reputation for his character that would help him address some pressing issues. He would change his appearance again when the time was ripe, but he would get as far away from this sector as he could before then. And if they still found him after all that, he might as well hang himself, as it would mean that no one in this game had any chance at all of disappearing. Chapter 39. Folks, I have found something interesting. Looks like an unidentified boss in a quiet place no one ever visits. We went into the woods with my girlfriend to get our herbalism and mushrooming skills on. The forest was really quiet. We saw no one, just birds and squirrels. As we were gathering herbs and mushrooms, a deer came out. My girlfriend plays a ranger, so it only took her one arrow to get the beast, a critical hit right in the neck. As soon as I started dressing the carcass, something weird appeared. You wouldn't believe it. A 20-foot-wide smiley face. I cast sleep, and my girlfriend popped her deadliest skill, hitting it right in the eye. It responded by calling us worms and gobbling us up. Not just killing, mind you, it ate us. Real slowly-like, while we were standing there stunned. And it wasn't any regular stun either, more like complete paralysis. The thing was chewing me, and there was nothing I could do. Can you imagine that? If it's a boss, let's farm it. It seems like no one knows about it yet. The woods are quiet, and there are few people in those parts. I ran into this boss once with my friends, lost 10% of my XP fighting it. Will it ever sate that hunger, I wonder? Folks, that ain't no boss. That thing's absolutely awful. Don't bother fighting it. Oh, so Smiley Face is still eating everyone? I thought they'd have fixed that bug long ago. You can gather all the herbs you want over there. Just make sure you leave the deer alone. That thing comes when it smells fresh meat and eats up the carcass as well as the hunters. Smiley Face rocks like you wouldn't believe, dude. You should be proud of meeting it. It's as rare as mammoths. Few have seen it. The mammoths are long extinct, you noob, whereas Smiley Face is alive and kicking. A private thread on a clan forum. Ross opened his eyes, instantly snapping into alertness without letting it show in any way. He spent the night underneath a tall fir tree, having fashioned a luxurious bed out of boughs the night before. The branches reached the ground here, forming something resembling a teepee, which was dry and gave the illusion of safety. But no one was ever quite safe in the woods. There were always beasts that ate the grass, followed closely by beasts that ate the grass feeders. Apart from everything, this was a game and not the real world. You could always find an abandoned old graveyard, cursed by an insane archmage in the vicinity, with corpses with an axe to grind wandering about, getting their revenge on anyone too slow or too stupid to get out of their way. Or some scatterbrained genius of necromancy, prone to forgetting to lock the cages holding his horrendous experiments. The forum map didn't show anything but woodland here, but Ross was already aware of what such maps were worth. It was likely that no players had ever set foot here, not even once. They probably just drew the map, staring at the ceiling, at best sneaking a quick glance in this direction from a faraway hill, which categorized the terrain as poorly studied and thus sufficient for leveling up one's cartography. There was no grinding to be done in the area, and no bosses worthy of bothering with. So, what was the point in wasting time here if there were so many more other, more interesting places? A branch cracked. It didn't just fall from a tree, but was broken by a paw or a hoof, or perhaps the boot of a high-level player with a red username who had decided it would be safe to leave a body here since no one would find it. Ross had a feeling he wasn't alone. There must have been a reason he had awoke before dawn. It could have been his burgeoning intuition warning him about likely trouble. He did not believe in the supernatural, so it must have been his beefed-up luck and perception, or something to that effect. Also, the description of the auxiliary seer stat said that he would occasionally be able to foresee future events, and the more he leveled it, the more effective it would be. Actually, that was a law of the game's mechanics. All the stats behaved this way. The bough of a nearby fir tree shook. Ross heard the breath of someone huge. He tensed, clutching the short staff in his hand. It was a pity the pet wasn't around. He didn't risk having it accompany him openly, for a flighting with a revived corpse would look a little too extravagant. He saw antlers above the overgrowth, and then the head they belonged to. Forest moose, aggression none, sociality low, level 35, skills none, stats, defense 62, attack 52. Letting a moose scare him. How positively ridiculous. Ross slowly raised the hand holding the staff, waited for the moose's head to stop moving as it chewed the top leaves of the bush, and hit it in the neck with the chaos arrow. The beast reared up in pain and surprise, and then got a critical hit in the leg as it came back down. The limb collapsed, and the animal fell down, rolling over and crushing the spinny. Ross didn't let the moose rise again, finishing it off with his third spell. He didn't think the fretful herbivores were good for leveling. That wasn't the reason he had killed the moose. According to the forum, you received an achievement for killing 1,000 mobs of different types, so you shouldn't spurn any of them. He'd also get a big hunk of excellent meat, as he was starting to get sick of berries and mushrooms already. Ross looted antlers and some glands from the moose. The hide was torn, so he decided against taking it. It was heavy and too damaged to cost more than a few coppers. The rest of the stuff must have been cheap, too, but it was a matter of principle. If he had enough free slots and could carry the weight, it would be unreasonable to leave anything of value behind. Ross had a problem. He didn't know how to start a fire, having no matches or anything else that could be used for this purpose. No fire school magic spells, either. Should he try to rub two sticks together? Would it work? It was a game, after all. Then again, why wouldn't it? Everything here was extremely realistic. He never got around to making a fire, as his musings were interrupted by some guests. Two wolves were watching him from a distance, baring their teeth, but reluctant to come any closer. With a light breeze having picked up at dawn, they must have sensed the smell of blood and meat. The forest was nowhere near as empty as it had seemed. Ross was about to cast Chaos Arrow to scare the lupine visitors away, but they darted off before he could do anything, with much haste and their tails between their legs. It didn't take a genius to realize some other fan of fresh meat was approaching, and one that was a lot more formidable than the first. There was the crackling of trampled bushes, and steps that sounded more like the sounds a pile driver would make, and not to small piles either. There was a moment of silence, followed by a sound that a herd of elephants might make if they all blew their trunks at once. Was that creature trying to sniff him out? Should he run, while there still was time? Ross may have been a weird noob, but he was a noob just the same, and messing with high-level creatures wasn't part of his job description. The trees bent, letting through a... Imagine a spherical creature the size of a two-story house, with minuscule crooked legs and arms to match. It had a wide, lipless mouth, tiny beady eyes, and a button-like nose that was barely visible. And all of that goodness was covered in ginger fur that wouldn't look out of place on a mammoth that had never been groomed, sticking this way and that in shaggy clumps. Malfunctioning quest. Aggressiveness, no data. Sociality, no data. Level, no data. Skills, no data. Stats, no data. A quiet forest, they said. No grinding or bosses, they said. Well, if this wasn't a boss, what could it possibly be? The monster stopped and smiled beatifically, transforming into a smiley face of the sort that may have grown in close proximity to Chernobyl, and boomed in a guttural bass,
"Would you believe it? Here I go, rambling through the woods, smelling flowers and listening to birds chirping, and what would I see but some meat lying about? Finders keepers, I say. No one has eaten it, so I'll have to do it myself."
Having been looking for an escape route with his peripheral vision, Ross froze in surprise. This was the first time he saw a mob speaking human language instead of chirping like the Thilbits. Could this be something other than a mob? A domesticated animal? Or a pet, perhaps? "Hey, you! Round thing. This meat is mine, you know."
"Wow."
The smiley face looked perplexed all of a sudden.
"A real miracle. A speaking worm. I say, it isn't slippery, and it doesn't wriggle unpleasantly. It must be yummy. Isn't it a pity, though? It's funny, and it can talk. But I'll have to eat it all the same. More's the pity."
"Won't you choke on me?" Ross inquired.
"I eat a lot, but I'm always careful. I do my chewing slowly and thoroughly. If I find a bone that's too hard to chew, I'll spit it out instead of swallowing it."
The smiley face reached for the moose carcass. "Paws off! The meat is mine!" Ross yelled, undeterred by the prospect of being eaten. That walking pillow would have to catch him first.
"Don't get your knickers in a bunch, little worm. I'll just eat the meat here, and then it's your turn."
Ross raised his staff and let loose a chaos arrow, hitting the upper jaw. The mob scratched it and smiled.
"Ouch! Tickles! Wanna play? All right, I'm game. I'll start with you. The meat can wait. It only gets tastier with time. What have you been eating lately, little worm?"
"Berries and mushrooms."
"You're not lying, are you?"
"Cross my heart and hope to die."
"That's good. You get all sorts. One of them ate something horrible in the city, all pepper and cinnamon. I had a heartburn for the rest of the day. My stomach doesn't digest such stuff well."
As the mob expounded on its digestive problems, it ambled towards Ross in a purposeful manner, thrusting its tiny paws forward. Ross hit the mob with magic two more times before finally realizing a direct confrontation would be futile. A single intellect point gave him 11 mana points. Bolstered by his equipment, his current mana pool was sitting at over 8,000 points. That was a lot, even for a top-level mage, but it still would not be enough to take so much as a quarter of HP off the smiley face. The mob was just incredibly tough. It had to be a boss. Regular players may have viewed bosses as near-invincible titans, creatures that could only be tackled with heavy artillery and armored vehicle support. To Ross, however, a boss was just another mob, and one that was likely to drop good loot. He'd already taken one down, so why not another? He could at least try. The monster may have looked clumsy, but it was a fast walker. Had Ross been overloaded, or had his running been slower, it would have been hard to get away. Once he got some distance between himself and his pursuer, he took a soul crystal out of his bag and freed the monster trapped inside. Undead Thilbit Commander, creature summoned from the Realm of Darkness, level 55.
"Hey, you!" the smiley face kept yelling. "Little worm, don't be in such a hurry. Do you have any urgent errands suddenly? Just hold on a moment, and there'll be no errands left anymore, let alone of the urgent kind. I'll take care of them all. Where are you? I meant to have a snack, not play hide-and-seek. Oh, so there you are. Don't go anywhere. I'm almost there."
The Thilbit attacked. The smiley face waved its furry paw casually. Your summoned creature dies. Hot damn! Ross was amazed. The Thilbit wasn't anywhere as strong as the Leprous, but being snuffed out like that, with a careless flick of a paw, compared to this fuzzy fellow, the Chaos Viceroy was a vole beside a Clydesdale. He took aim and cast two more Chaos Arrows, aiming for the paws, hoping to get lucky and land a critical hit. Unsurprisingly, his efforts were entirely in vain. It was starting to get painfully obvious that he'd need an anti-tank rifle to break one of those legs.
"Stop tickling me, little worm, or I'll start laughing. And the thing is, when I laugh, everyone around me cries. That doesn't seem right."
Ross drew away from the mob again, hitting it a few more times in the legs with Chaos Arrow, then again and again. They kept running around the carcass in circles, the mob being unable to catch up with his quarry, and Ross refusing to retreat, thereby admitting defeat. Yet, he would have to admit it sooner or later, having already used up a barrel of mana on the ball of fur, with the mob not seeming to care one bit. Though he was dealing real damage, the boss's HP bar just wasn't budging. How much health did that monstrosity have?
"Little worm, will you simmer down? If you run around too much, the meat will be tough and gristly. Is that what you want?
I'm going to skin you and use your pelt as a rug in my castle."
"Oh, a funny one. Wherever will you get a castle? You're so little and so stupid."
"I'll keep it for later."
"Silly little worm. What kind of later do you expect to have, eh? Ouch! Will you stop that? It no longer tickles. It's starting to irritate me. You don't want me to get angry."
"Oh, so you don't like it, do you? Here's more, and more!"
"You're bad, and really mean. All your meat must be steeped in bile. Whoever would eat something like that? I'm off. Stay there all by yourself."
"Hey, where do you think you're going?"
"I've got some pressing business to attend to. I've got to eat the meat and say my farewells. I might even skip the latter part. Why would I want to say my farewells to some worm?"
"I'm not done with you yet." Ross started to pelt the retreating smiley face with one Chaos Arrow after another. "I won't let you go like that. Hey, you, walking rug, hold it right there. If you do anything with my meat, I'll keep on your tail until I get your hide."
"Little worm, why escalate a groundless conflict? I agree that I was a little bit in the wrong there, but will you stop chasing and tickling me already? Bearing grudges doesn't become you."
"The meat is mine."
"All right, sure, it's yours, big deal. Do you think I've never seen meat belonging to someone else? But we need to recognize an obvious fact. You are rather small, yet you have a lot of meat.
What would a small worm like you want so much meat for? There's just something unfair about it. Let's be sensible. You'll take as much as you need and leave the rest for me.
How much can I take, exactly? Ross asked.
The question reeks of ambiguity and is hard to answer as a result. Our relationship so far has been based on failure to understand where our mutual interests lie, and I'm prepared to admit I am partially to blame, so I'm willing to make a conciliatory gesture. You can take as much as you can carry.
Agreed.
Perfect. Let's not procrastinate. Chop off as much as you need at once.
Ross approached the moose carcass unhurriedly and said dismissively, "No need to chop. I'll just take it." Having said that, he hid the moose carcass in a slot on his belt. Though its weight was around 700 or 800 kilos, it was immediately reduced by a factor of 10, making it easy for Ross, with his stats, to carry the load, albeit with some penalties. Even now, it wasn't his hunting trophy that encumbered him most, but the metal collected in the Thilbit dungeon, including the ore. All in all, he had about a ton of stuff on his person. Ross pretended the load wasn't heavy as he waved the smiley face goodbye, flashing the friendliest of his smiles.
"Bye-bye, my fuzzy friend. Take good care now."
The mob's legs folded, apparently outraged by such blatant robbery, and it transformed into a very unhappy walking emoticon, its face wearing an expression of deep dejection.
"I say, little worm, what gives? I feel robbed."
"You said I could take as much as I could carry, so I did. You said that explicitly, didn't you?"
"I admit I did, but I implied a part of the carcass and not the entire thing."
"Cut the demagoguery out already. I got mine, and now you can get your part."
"My part?"
said the grumpy smiley face, looking like it would burst into tears any moment.
"But you have left me nothing at all. There's just the trampled grass from underneath the carcass. It's all gone."
"Oh, so it's meat that you want?"
"Duh, I always want meat."
"I'd be prepared to accommodate you, but there's something I need in return."
"Just what do you need, little worm? Want me to bury you in damp, loamy soil and damp leaves so that it would be more pleasant for you to crawl about?"
"We can do without that. I'll just ask you a few questions, and you'll answer them. Agreed?"
"Just that? Sure. I love a good chat. I hate to be doing it on an empty stomach, though. Why don't you get the meat out? I could at least look at it. A sight for sore eyes, as it were."
"Answers first."
"You're mean, but bloody-minded, and you have no fear. I'll give you that. I respect that, which is why I haven't eaten you. Now, what do you want to know?"
"Who the blazes are you?"
"Oh, sure. Please pardon my manners. I never got around to introducing myself. I am Bug."
"Bug?"
"Yeah, a software error.
I know what bugs are. Could you be more specific?"
"That was what a worm that looked like you called me. He came when I forgot everything."
"Forgot everything?"
"Yeah. I was supposed to do something. Wait in the woods until someone came. They were supposed to bring meat or something of the sort, and I was supposed to help them somehow, I guess. Only it took too long to just stand here, and I got too hungry. There was no meat from anyone for a long time, so I forgot whatever I was supposed to do there, and when the worms came, I ate them."
"Worms like me?"
"Yeah, similar. Only those were fatter. One was outright delicious. The second one was okay, and the third one got stuck in my teeth on the account of wearing too much yucky iron. And then I suddenly found myself in a place with too much light, but hardly any trees at all. And there was someone who called me a bug. That's it.
I remember now. He said I was an error, an NPC with an immortality option that had survived from the beta testing stage and could not be disabled for some reason. He tasted all right, if a bit bland. I could do with more tartness.
What was the shining place?
No idea. I didn't like it much, so I headed back for the forest.
How exactly did you do it?
The way I normally do. If I want to be near the trees, that's where I show up.
Bug, do you remember the quest you were supposed to wait for in the woods?
Nah, I don't. Forgot everything. It was a long time ago, and I'm not interested in that anyway. So, how about that meat?
Ross got the carcass out of his belt, pulled out his knife, and sliced off a good chunk of the leg.
Here, take it. All yours.
The moose meat went into the gigantic mouth. Bug chewed slowly, just the way he said he did, squinting from sheer delight